This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonantoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number two of a Friday edition of the Lombardi Line here on VSiN and the DraftKings Network as we welcome you to the Circus Sportsbook Studio, downtown Las Vegas. I'm Ben Wilson, in for Stormy Bonantoni. My man, Joe Serallo, with us as well, in for Mike Palm today. And Joe, we have an NBA Finals set. We have NHL playoff action tonight. You have best bets in Major League Baseball. I've got college baseball. We've got lots of action here today. A fun hour number two coming up. And game one already on the move here for the NBA, even though we've got 6 days to basically ruminate and break it all down. But early money here on the Celts and over for game one against the Mavs. Nothing I've bet yet. I'm just looking at series sort of plays here. But interesting to see that early line movement so vociferously in favor of the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, and you know, I think you and I are on the same page with this one. I just can't advise anyone to lay on that series price over $2 on Boston. You know, my pick isn't official yet. I'm leaning Boston with still, God knows, a week to go. But I just, at that price, I can't advise a series play on the Celtics. I love, you know, some of the angles that you were exploring in the first hour of the program. But 6.5, you know, I don't know. It's, we saw what Indiana did game one at the Garden, as they call it. Indiana went in there and they should have beaten them, frankly. So 6.5 is a big number. I'm leaning Mavs with the points. Again, it's all so early, but interesting movement for sure, especially that total, because you mentioned it just a few minutes ago, how the Mavericks finished the year, the final 15 games in the postseason. They've been the best defensive team in hoops since late March. And I mean, it's not exactly a crazy high total, but the fact that it's been bet up, I might go the other way on that.
Up to 214.5, a full point from the 213.5 consensus opener. DraftKings, they opened this game one while Dallas, Minnesota was still going on last night because of how much of a blowout that was. It was 5.5 at open. We're now out to 6.5. 7 is the buy point, at least for me. If we get 7, if that pops at some point over the next 6 days. And also, this might keep going up if Kristaps Porzingis is officially ruled in. We're going to ask Tom Giles about that in 15 minutes. Reports on the Celtics for NBC Sports Boston. That's another thing, too. If you like Dallas, I would say wait on the game one line in particular, because that's the one game where we're not totally sure about Porzingis and his status going forward. The bets I'm looking to make, I'm still doing some shopping on this, but I will bet the series both to go 6 exactly and to go 7. It's over 2-1 on each of those individual bets, meaning your payouts in the +110 to +130 range. If you put you know, half unit on each, depending on which result hits, I'd rather do that as opposed to lay $1.50 on the series to go over 5.5 and not have to risk as much for a payout that is better in this case for the individual bets. That's my strategy here for Celtics and Mavericks. And I'd probably also say fair to just assume Dallas is not winning this series without Luka Doncic being at an MVP caliber level. If you are wanting to and believing in Dallas actually winning the series, it would be find a good Doncic Finals MVP price, which I'm seeing in that +215 range. Get a little more bang for your buck there than just betting the straight +175 that's out there at DK right now.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair point. I mean, look, the Mavericks have, you know, pieced the correct ancillary pieces together around Doncic. But we were just talking about it, right? Kyrie has embraced this new role, has really turned a page on his career, and he's become more of a distributor, more of a, really for the first time, I'll say a great teammate. And that means that all eyes and all attention is on Luka Doncic. If the Mavs do win this series, barring something absolutely absurd happening, it's going to be a Doncic MVP. I think you hit the nail on the head there.
At +215, that's the first price I'm seeing. Again, shop around for that. You'd like to see a little bit more of a separation between Doncic's price and Dallas winning, but at the same time, books are aware of what we're just talking about. It's going to be a series led by Doncic if Dallas is to win. Just named Western Conference Finals MVP last night. We will talk more NBA. Mention our pal Tom Giles joins us from NBC Sports Boston here in the next 10 minutes to break down all the angles for Boston Dallas. The series and game one gets set to start next Thursday night there from the Garden in Boston. We're talking a lot of NFL headlines, though, as well, as we reset an hour number two here, Joe, and we dove a little bit into some of the latest extensions around the wide receivers in the NFL. A couple of interesting guys, though, that are in San Francisco, that one is looking for an extension. The other, we just find out, is now coming off injury here. We'll start with the George Kittle piece, because just kind of classic, like, tough guy NFL player. You had no idea George Kittle playing with a core muscle injury that was suffered in around week 9 or week 10 that he told reporters at during OTAs. But he underwent a core muscle surgery in the offseason. He's hoping to be back to practice by training camp. Not that I expect this to really have an impact on Kittle going forward, because he's been such a warrior, such a key piece for San Francisco. But it does kind of lead us into, look, tight ends in 2024, even if you're a hybrid guy like a George Kittle, it is a really hard position to play effectively without taking very big nicks and bruises along the way.
Yeah, I mean, tight end outside of quarterback might be the toughest position. Or I'll say quarterback, cornerback, and then maybe tight end in that three slot. Especially a guy like Kittle, who really approaches his blocking with the same respect and same ferocity as he approaches, you know, being a top receiver in the National Football League, right? Kittle does not take plays off, whether they're throwing or running the ball. And you really just have to respect the hell out of George Kittle in every way he approaches the game. Look, at the end of the day, you said it, it's May 31st. We're not even into June. And frankly, a seasoned, savvy vet like George Kittle, they could say he'll be ready to return to action on August 20th. And I'd say he'll be fine week one. I have zero concerns about this Kittle thing. He's got ample time to recover. And this guy, you know, he's been around the block a time or two. He knows the playbook inside and out. It's not like he's a kid who's missing. Yeah, that May is important for the kids, right? May is important for the rookies. You look at some of the other headlines, and Romo Dunes has a little tight hammy, which I'm not even worried about that, but he's a rookie, right? Those are the guys that I think need May. George Kittle needs to be resting up, because when that guy is out there for 17 weeks plus the postseason, no one is more physical than George Kittle. So take all the rest you need now, because he gives the Niners 120%. 20 plus weeks every year since they seem to go to the conference championship game every year.
We love the panic of OTAs when guys are gone. And then we look at the calendar and go, oh, wait, we have over 3 months till.
Yeah. Tell me it's a slow news cycle when we start talking about this stuff, right?
Seriously. On that, the one thing we'd briefly touched on in hour number one, along the thought here of with a couple of big name wide receiver extensions recently, where you have Nico Collins, Houston, $72 million and 3 years on that. Also 3 years as well for Jalen Waddle in Miami, almost $85 million. Seems like Brandon Ayuk will be the next shoe to fall, as far as, at least I know he and his camp would love an extension here as a 2025 free agent deal. All reports don't appear to be imminent at all. Your brief thoughts here, Joe, we talked about in hour number one, you're not a fan in general of Ayuk, but let's expand on that here. And what actually is going to happen if you get an upset Ayuk now, maybe reporting to camp late or being disgruntled in general? How does that throw off just the general chemistry, the dynamic for a San Francisco offense that is so multidimensional and so explosive? But look, you have one guy go down or one guy not performing at previous levels, and all of a sudden things get thrown into flux here for the Niners.
Yeah, Ben, I think if you get an upset Brandon Ayuk here, it's simply next man up. That kid that they took that shocked the world out of Florida will go up there and be the next deep threat or the next number three option. Because frankly, when you look at that offense, isn't Ayuk their number three, maybe number four option, right? Like Christian McCaffrey, in terms of playmakers, I'm not talking about in terms of receivers, in terms of playmakers, it's Christian McCaffrey's offense. And then because of his versatility that he brings to the table, Deebo Samuel is probably their next best weapon. And then because he year in, year out is a top two tight end, you got George Kittle. Like Brandon Ayuk thrives because of the trickery in a Kyle Shanahan offense, because of the schematics around him. Brandon Ayuk by himself, you know, he wants Amon-Ra St. Brown money. He is not Amon-Ra St. Brown. Amon-Ra St. Brown is a clear number one on a pass-first team, and I'll give Detroit credit. Their run game with the Gibbs-Montgomery tandem this year was impressive, but Amon-Ra St. Brown makes Jared Goff a Pro Bowl quarterback, right? I don't think Brandon Ayuk makes Brock Purdy an elite quarterback. I think Shanahan's system and the weapons like McCaffrey and Samuel make Purdy better than Ayuk makes Purdy. Ayuk really is more of a deep threat. I said it earlier, I'll say it again. At times, he's a bit of a drop problem. He can be a distraction. Amon-Ra St. Brown, he does everything, man. He's a better route runner. He is a great blocker. And he shows up with a smile on his face to work every day. Brandon Ayuk, after the Super Bowl, you mentioned his camp, Ben. His camp is tweeting that he should part ways with the Niners and be let go or traded or you know, go on to bigger and better things. I don't know what bigger and better things you want. Like I said, they're in the NFC championship game every year. Ayuk does not deserve top receiver money. He deserves, to me, more like Jaylen Waddle money.
And what's obvious is that it's not like Ayuk, based on his team and what the 49ers have proven to do time and again, not like he has the leverage to force their hand early in this process. Like if there was a book that let you make a prop bet on, will a contract extension be signed by Brandon Ayuk in the month of September? Ideally, you'd be getting very, very nice plus money on that, because most people think, wait, that's super late in the process to be getting deals done. Oh, I would happily bet that. I mean, look what's happened in the past year. You just run down the list. I mean, Kittle most recently, who we just talked about, Fred Warner, Debo Samuel, and as well as Nick Bosa. I mean, it's all guys. Niners are not afraid. They understand how important those players are, but they also get the process of not forcing and rushing into a deal. And that, to me, seems more obvious than anything. I mean, Niners have certainly set aside money to pay an extension. How much will it be is kind of another question mark. And they also have a guy in Charvarius Ward who's going to be a 2025 free agent, likely going to, you know, I don't know how they figure that in the pecking order. He would likely, on the skill position, Joe, be number two there. But it just speaks to the organization. Like, John Lynch is a GM. He's never been a guy to panic. He's very set in his ways, and it's a process that's worked really well for the Niners in years past, keeping their big-name guys.
Yeah, it's a team that drafts really well, you know? Debo, Ayuk, Juwan Jennings, these guys were all fines. These guys were all, you know, none of these guys were clear consensus top draft picks. They were really good finds. Maybe this kid out of Florida is a really good find. I was pretty surprised when they drafted him, but maybe he was drafted to be a successor to Ayuk. Don't forget, just over a month ago, there were all these conversations. Will Ayuk be traded? Rumors about him to Pittsburgh. I'll tell you who wouldn't take this crap from Ayuk is Mike Tomlin. So, you know what? I almost want to see him in a change of scenery. Get him out of there, because it just shows that the Niners can plug and play different pieces in and still be the Niners.
Yeah, Ayuk, still a lot to be determined on that with the contract extension up. And the reports, by the way, on Charvarius Ward indicates much more likely he'll just play out this season, have a chance to cash in free agency in 2025. We'll talk more NFL in about 20 minutes with Mark Schofield. But up next, NBA Finals breakdown with Tom Giles from NBC Sports Boston.
Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the sports betting network.
For a limited time only, we're slashing the price of our annual subscription. Normally $240, you can now secure your subscription for just $199. Today is the final day. We'll throw in an extra 2 months for free. That is 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day when you use promo code Lombardi. With VSiN Pro, you'll get immediate access to our daily best bets, betting splits, exclusive betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video content. Remember, today is the final day of this 14-month offer, so visit VSiN.com/subscribe now to grab your 14 months of VSiN Pro for just $199 with promo code Lombardi. That is VSiN.com/subscribe. That includes all the insights on the Stanley Cup playoffs, NBA Finals. Now that we have the matchup set, Major League Baseball, we're going to talk about some of those best bets with Joe Serallo here in about a half hour, and college baseball, because regional started today, Joe. So I'm an excited man. We inject all the college baseball into my veins, and we got a couple plays later today. So prepare yourself.
I love it.
Let's go.
I love it. The road to Omaha.
Road to Omaha. We got to do something to keep our minds occupied while we wait for the NBA Finals to start. We have 6 whole days to wait now. Boston Dallas is set next Thursday night from the Garden. And joining us right now, as we got to our progressive guest line, it's a man who is, I've been following the Celtics all season in NBC Sports Boston host Tom Giles, kind enough to give us some time right now on the Friday edition of the Lombardi Line. Tom, we just were mentioning some of the most heavily offered props right now at DraftKings Sportsbook. One of them is the Kristaps Porzingis piece, the total number of rebounds that he'll average in this series. And it goes into his availability and the lack of general info that we have right now on it. How close to 100% do you expect Porzingis to be when he returns? And what's the likelihood that he does come back here for game one?
I think it's extremely likely. I think that there's a video out there from an hour ago that you saw Kristaps Porzingis. Didn't really look that limited, but then again, you're not really getting the full view. You're seeing a lot of him shooting around, but seems to be moving okay. I think the indication that it was possible that he could have returned to the end of the last series should make you feel a little more comfortable about him playing in this series. The only question is, how many minutes is he going to play right off the bat? So I think game one's really the one that's kind of up in the air. I would expect that, you know, he's probably going to be playing somewhere around 20 minutes, but I don't know if he's going to get the full boat right away. So I expect him to make a difference, but the rebounding prop, I don't know. Jason Tatum is one of those guys that just seems to gobble up rebounds in games that really matter. So I kind of shy away a little bit from Kristaps Porzingis when it comes to rebounding.
Hey, Tom, while my early lean on this series is definitely favoring the Celtics, One thing that I've been saying has concerned me all postseason long about this team is their depth. They might run 8 or 9 guys out there, but I feel like this is a team without KP that runs out 6 meaningful guys, Pritchard really being the only guy off the bench who's making a difference for this team. How much is that depth concerning to you, and how much does that really make it more important that Porzingis returns game one for this series?
Well, I think Porzingis is the big one, because Al Horford playing 40 minutes a night doesn't feel sustainable. Now, obviously, yeah, in the finals, you're looking at 2 days off in between for just about every single game, except for games 3 and 4. But going back to the last series when they're playing every other day, you know, Al Horford played 40 minutes, you know, I think it was in that game one, and then 25 minutes in game two, and then bounced back and had his best game in game three. So really, when he's on shorter minutes, you can see how that impacts him. Now, as far as whether or not they can do it with 7 guys, I actually think that they can. And they've gone to different bench players at times. Joe Mazzulla's done a pretty good job of that, of mixing it up. You know, you had an O'Shea Brissett game in there, David Tillman getting some run as well. If Sam Hauser can knock down a couple of shots, you feel a lot better about him being on the floor. But their starters, their core, I think can carry most of those minutes. They're young. They haven't played nearly as many games as most teams that get to this point in the playoffs. So I'm not that concerned about them, only rolling 7 deep if that's what it takes.
Tom Giles joining us right now on our Progressive Guest Line, breaking down Boston and Dallas NBA Finals. Series price has been set. Celtics a $2.15 favorite that starts next Thursday night. As far as this, the defense of Luka Doncic, which will be the most important focal point as far as Boston defensively, a team that has been so elite on the defensive side all year. We saw how Minnesota tried to throw like Rudy Gobert at times. They kind of mix it up. They tried everything, didn't work. How do you expect Joe Mazzulla as a head coach to approach that strategy when he has multiple really good perimeter defenders to handle Doncic? And how do they decide how that's going to break down, at least when we start the series next Thursday?
I think that, you know, you're probably going to see them for the most part switch quite a bit, would be my guess when it comes to Luka. I mean, the one thing, watching that last series, and Minnesota is supposed to be the best defense out there, and they look like it in games 1 and 2 against Denver, and it kind of felt like it's been a while since we've seen that. You have to be careful, whether or not you're going to go drop coverage or not, and then certainly with Gafford and some of their bigs, Lively with the rim runs. I think the Celtics are going to be much better at defending that, but you kind of brought it up. Like 1 through 5, the Celtics don't really have that much of a weakness as far as defensively, especially if you're just looking at those core guys. So I know one thing, if Luka hits 1 logo 3, they're not going to give him space out there, you know, beyond that. Like they're going to have a hand up in the face. Like last night you're watching that game, you're thinking, man, what's Minnesota doing here? Like he just stuck one from there. So you need to get out on him as he runs away with this thing.
Hey, Tom, I kind of want to talk about something that obviously you're hoping will not happen. But if Boston isn't able to get this done, now this becomes a team that we've seen get to the conference finals numerous times, get to the NBA finals numerous times, and not be able to finish the job. What does that potential offseason look like to you if they come up short here?
I honestly don't think you're going to see too many major changes. This team's set up to come back next year. And to me, if they don't get it done here, it's because there's some sort of injury that gets in the way. I think the Celtics are the better team, and maybe it's just because Luka and Kyrie come up clutch down the stretch, but you know, they're poised to, they already, extended Drew Holiday. Porzingis is extended. You know, Derek White is up for another extension, even though he's already here through next year anyway. So they've got their core in place, and this is a team that won 64 games in the regular season. I understand the path to the playoffs hasn't been as hard, but 12-2 in the postseason. So, you know, it doesn't feel like there's any major problems there. The coaching staff, I think that Joe Mazzulla has been solid in his playoffs and timeout usage. Everything else, the adjustments have looked a little different than what we saw in the regular season, which felt like at times maybe he was kind of letting them work some things out on their own. So it would have to be disastrous to me for them to make any changes going to next year if they were to fall short.
And he's Tom Giles. You can follow him at Tom Giles NBCS. Host for NBC Sports Boston, covering the Boston Celtics, Celts Mavericks game one next Thursday night from TD Garden. And I think about the big storyline that we will see hammered home, I'm sure, over the next 5-6 days is the Kyrie Irving, the rematch against Boston. I'm sure it's got to be weird if you've covered the Celtics like you have. Now you see Kyrie, it's like he suddenly decided to grow up and mature at age 32 and become this team first distributor and find his find really a role for the first time in a few years. How do you expect just the return to Boston, the back and forth with the defense of the Celtics, how good they've been on the perimeter? How do you expect it to go for Kyrie back in the spotlight now in a really big situation for the first time in a few years?
I think it's interesting. You know, obviously he has completely changed than what we saw the last time he was here. And there's still a relationship there with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, having played with them that when they were young players, going back to when Kyrie was here. The fans, that's going to be part of it too. Is he going to get booed constantly? Or are you going to have Kyrie chants? Some of them you can say on radio, some of you can't. Like, I hope it doesn't come to that. Like, I hope that, you know, it's just the friendly booing and everything else. But I'm curious if Luka Doncic becomes more of the villain in this series. You saw Luka getting booed last night by the Minnesota fans, and he's got to take in the forefront as far as that goes. You see him chirping with fans on the sideline. It's fun to watch, but he might actually become more of the villain than Kyrie in this series. It's possible. I don't think it'll happen, but that's something to keep an eye on, because obviously the way Kyrie left here wasn't the best. But at the same time, I think you have to look at where the Celtics are now, and they've matured. Their young stars who played alongside of them have matured. So it certainly adds a layer to this that's going to be a lot of fun.
That'd be a hell of a plot twist if Luka becomes the villain, given how Kyrie and the Celtics ended things. Not exactly the most amicable of breakups. Hey, there's speaking of Kyrie, there's one specific prop I want to ask you about. Game one, I know it's a week off, but you look at his points number, 23.5 is the number. I lean the under. I want your opinion on this one, Tom, because Kyrie, to me, has just not been the scoring threat this season that he was when he was with Boston, when he was with Brooklyn. What are your thoughts on that number?
Yeah, it feels a little high to me as well, because you also have to consider that Kyrie, in his returns against Boston, has struggled a little bit. So I think the Celtics, again, they've got bigger guards. It's going to be a lot more difficult for him. So I would lean on to the under on that one as well.
He is Tom Giles joining us here on the Lombardi Line, breaking down Celtics Mavericks. A lot more breakdowns to come, since we still have so much time before game one gets underway. Tom, always a pleasure, man. Thanks for stopping by and giving us a few minutes.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And we are continuing the discussion. I'll hear later in the show, Joe, at first of many talks about Boston and Dallas throughout this NBA Finals run-up that we'll have. We will go back, though, to the NFL in just a second. Mark Schofield, our pal from USA Today, stops by the show up next, breaking down his thoughts on some of the latest contract extensions throughout the NFL, notably a couple of big-name wide receivers. Then we'll close the show with some best bets, our early thoughts how to bet Celtics Mavericks, as well as MLB from Joe, college baseball from myself. It's all still to come right here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSEN, the sports betting network.
If you have not done so already, be sure to check out our new LukeBeeson.com with best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, and betting guides. We have daily French Open bets posted basically overnight from our senior editor, Zach Cohen, as well as Gil Alexander, who has his plays every morning on a numbers game. Great time of year. French Open every single day. Starts at 2 a.m. for us on the West Coast, Joe. It's been a great betting vehicle as well. So excited to keep diving into that as we're almost a week into that tournament. And all of these available at VSiN.com. What is also a great time of year is to dive into these sort of in-the-weeds NFL offseason topics, and we're about to do that right now, talk some of these contract extensions with our pal Mark Schofield, NFL reporter, also covers a Formula One. That's I'd imagine, Mark, keeping you more busy right now as we go out to the Progressive Guest Line from USA Today. You know, F1, NFL, all basically in the same vein. Those guys are totally look exactly alike. But I saw you were just at the Miami Grand Prix, which was in the Dolphin Stadium, so we at least have some comp there.
Yeah, there was some comp there, and it was fascinating to be handed around sort of the paddock, the hospitality spaces for all the teams, which is right on the field at Hard Rock Stadium. So for somebody like me that goes between the NFL world and the F1 world on almost a weekly down to daily basis, it was nice to be sort of walking around on the field at Hard Rock, looking up in the stands, seeing the Dolphins, Ring of Honor. And then, of course, I'm handed out at Alpine's hospitality space, and who walks in? but Patrick Mahomes. So it was a whole bunch of worlds collided for me that week down in Miami. But excited to chop up a little NFL, F1, French Open, whatever you guys want to get into. I'm ready to go.
Well, we're all about versatility. Joe knows that this time of year. Well, you were at the Dolphins stadium where they had the Miami Grand Prix. Dolphins are making some news with the big contract extension for Jalen Waddle here over almost $85 million total, a good portion of that guaranteed mark over three seasons. With all the perceived holes that Miami have, and I'd say probably more perceived holes for a returning playoff team than most heading into 2024, where do you see Miami going from here as far as like the rest of the roster construction, and what can they realistically do now to make the team able to get back to the postseason with how much they've just contributed and now basically locked up with a top wide receiver in Jalen Waddle?
Yeah, I mean, the big question is going to be, what does this now mean for, with respect to the Dolphins, for a future Tua extension? We know that he's probably one of the next quarterbacks to get paid. We just saw Jared Goff's contract. And if you're Tua's representatives, if you're Tua himself, you might be thinking, okay, well, that's now the starting point, because that's where the quarterback game is usually played, right? A quarterback gets paid, and the next quarterback that's up, they want to get at least that, if not more, money. So you're going to have a big contract for Jalen Waddle, as we just talked about. Now, potentially a big to a deal. What does that mean for Tyreek Hill down the road? But respect to this season, though, this is a team now that, like you said, they've got some question marks along the offensive line, the defensive side of the ball, where they've had some injuries. And this is a team that was one and done in the playoffs last year. Now you're thinking about paying Tua and hoping he takes a big step forward, paying Waddle this contract, hoping he contributes more. Can they get beyond where they were last season, which was a one-and-done team in the playoffs? Let's face it. I know it was a cold night out in Kansas City, but they didn't look like they were ready to go that night when they lost to the Chiefs on wild card weekend. And so there are big expectations for this Dolphins team, for that offense to take a big step forward, to continue to put up the points like they did last year until they had that wild card loss. There are a lot of questions. And you look around the AFC East, I think all four teams have some questions, whether it's Rodgers and coming back from the injury, whether it's the Bills and what that offense will look like now with Stephon Diggs down in Houston. Certainly the Patriots breaking in a rookie quarterback, perhaps, and Drake May. So there are a lot of questions in that division, but certainly a lot of questions with the Dolphins, given the money that they'll be showing off of Waddle, and as we expect at some point in the future, Tua Tagovailoa himself.
Yeah, Mark, you touched on pretty much everything that worries me about the Dolphins there, whether it be the defense, the O-line, their inability to win on the road in colder climates. I don't care if you put up 70 on Denver at home in September. What are you doing for me in January? But I want to shift to a team that did something for me in January, made me a little money against the Cleveland Browns, and that's the Houston Texans. Another extension there, Nico Collins. I think a smarter deal for the franchise, slightly less guaranteed, but also keeping last year's number one receiver happy. What do you think about the extension and about the Texans season? That win total, it's only 9.5, Mark. I'm seeing a lot of Texans hate out there, a lot of sophomore slump talk for CJ Stroud. And I'm on the opposite edge of that. I think CJ and this team, they're ready to do bigger and better things in year two, in my opinion. What are your thoughts?
I am absolutely with you on the Houston Texans. You know, seeing that over under right now, I would get on that over, because let's look at what Houston has done, because they, first of all, nailed the quarterback pick, right? By everything we saw last year, C.J. Stroud looks to be the future of that franchise, if not just the present of that franchise, given what they did last year, a division title, and as you said, winning that playoff game against the Cleveland Browns. And now that put them in the position to, as we've seen other teams do before, right? You get that rookie quarterback on that rookie deal, you load up around them, you bring in Stephon Diggs, you bring in some help on the defensive side of the ball. You know, they had a number of key draft choices as well that they've added to the roster, and get a Nico Collins who, you know, he and Stroud look to have some great chemistry last year. You're going to bring Stephon Diggs into the fold. You're going to get Tank Dell back from that injury he had late last year. You're going to get him back at some point. I'm really excited about the present and the future for the Houston Texans. And so I know there are, you know, questions about sophomore slumps or, oh, teams are going to have a year of film on C.J. Stroud. The Cleveland Browns had enough, all the film they needed on C.J. Stroud, and it didn't help them in that playoff game. So I'm very excited about what the Texans have done. I'm very excited about their present and the future. And I'm with you on that. That over-under looks mighty nice to me in respect to the over.
He is Mark Schofield, who you follow at Mark Schofield, joining us on our Progressive Guest Line, talking NFL offseason storylines. You find his work in SB Nation as well, talking all things NFL and Formula One. I saw you and a couple of your colleagues, you put together your 100 list, top storylines you're looking forward to with 100 days out. That was a couple days ago until the NFL season starts. Number one was Caleb Williams and what to make of him and how will he live up to lofty expectations as a number one overall draft pick going to the Chicago Bears with a team who's still viewed to have a lot of work left to do with the roster, but made a lot of strides toward the back half of last season. Expectations for a rookie quarterback pretty high when you consider an 8.5 win total. Realistically, when you break down this division with what Chicago has done in the offseason in drafting a Caleb Williams and then a Roma Dunze very high within the top 10, how would you set the bar for year one of the Caleb Williams experience?
You know, I think expectations are high for a reason. I mean, you look at, you know, what Ryan Poles was able to do this past offseason, bringing in Keenan Allen, who I think is going to be a great mentor, not just for Roma Dunze, who I think was a great pick for them, but for Caleb Williams himself, to give him that, you know, insight from a receiver's perspective. You know, these are the things I want to do against this coverage. Oh, on this route concept, this is where we should be looking. This is where you need to throw the ball. Now, they have some questions, you know, offensive line, center, for example, left tackle, Braxton Jones was their incumbent starter, but they had a third-round pick that they've added that would be an interesting camp battle to watch. Who's going to be on the other edge opposite Montez Sweat? But I really like what they've done. Now, it's going to be a tough division. You've got, obviously, Detroit. You know, we wonder about the Minnesota Vikings, when we're going to see J.J. McCarthy, but certainly the Packers took a big step forward last year with Jordan Love. Now his second year as a starter, you expect that to be a good team as well. But with everything the Bears added, this was a 7-win team last year who, like you said, caught a little bit of fire at the end of last season to get to those 7 wins. I look at that 8.5. I look at, you know, are they a fringe playoff team? Maybe it's a year early for that, but 8, 9 wins could be possible for this team.
You know, Mark, you just touched on Detroit when you were talking about that competitive NFC North, and we actually haven't even gotten to this story yet, but just had an interesting press conference. Their offensive coordinator, Ben Johnson, talking about why he decided to remain the OC and not pursue a head coaching vacancy, said 5 of the, you know, 8 guys who were just hired are probably going to be gone within 3 years. I like the culture in Detroit. I like the stability here. I'm a part of something special. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, not too many guys would pass up on head coaching opportunities the way Johnson did. What does that say about the Lions' culture and ultimately their staying power atop the NFC right now?
I think it certainly says a lot of good things about their culture, and I think it says a lot about their staying power, because you look at the big deal that Jared Goff just got. Johnson was a big part of that, and the way he's able to get the most out of Jared Goff. If you watch that offense, you'll see concepts on an NFL Sunday that Goff was running back in his college days at California. He's used a lot of the college concepts that got Goff comfortable in the pocket on the NFL field in that Detroit Lions offense. And everything I've been told, I have some colleagues that are a lot closer to the Detroit Lions than I am, have said for years now that Johnson just likes being an offensive coordinator. He likes putting together game plans and calling plays. So I think this sets up really well. Continuity is such an important thing for an offense, for a quarterback, and getting the most out of your offensive play, you know, skill position players, when you have that continuity from an offensive coordinator and play caller. That's what Detroit has. You know, sometimes we see that sort of slump after making it to a championship game like Detroit did, and maybe they take a step back. I don't expect that from the Lions. I think they're going to just stay where they are, have a really good season. I know they're going to have a tougher schedule, but that continuity is so critical for the Detroit Lions this season.
Mark Schofield joining us on the Friday edition of Lombardi Line, talking all things NFL offseason storylines. Follow Mark at Mark Schofield. Great as always to catch up, sir. Be well as you, I know you're on the jaunt right now covering all things Formula One, so busy time for you, even though we're in the NFL offseason, man. Thanks for the time.
Thanks so much for having me. Have a great rest of the day and a fantastic weekend.
We absolutely will, and we're going to continue that, Mark, because we're about to talk some college baseball and MLB here on a Friday. Get your weekend kickstarted here as we wrap up on the Lombardi Line next. Joe's best bets on the Major League Baseball slate. I've got a couple plays in college baseball we'll break down all right after this as we wrap up the show next on VSiN.
Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We are so close to crowning an NBA champ, and with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New to DraftKings, listen up. New customers get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5, and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VSIN. The crown is yours. Back for the final time, Ben Wilson, Joe Cirillo with you. Been a blast, Joe, hanging out with you here on this Friday in for Stormy and Mike. Big thanks to our producer, Justin Emery, Jeremy Wengel, our technical director, everybody else hard at work behind the scenes here at our Circus Sportsbook studio. Justin's already cashed a bet, or at least a leg of a bet today. Reds to not score in the first inning. We are underway there at Wrigley. Reds and Cubs here, getting your baseball slate started on a Friday, Joe. So that's a great, you know, here on the show, we like to win and lose together. So especially Absolutely. When we win together. But we'll dive in here, what you're looking to target. Few bets for you on the card. I want to start off with the team that's been red hot here in the Cleveland Guardians, who are right now amidst that running for best record in baseball here, 3-game lead atop the AL Central and the Kansas City Royals. What do you make of the matchup today, as they are big home favorites here, and will have a pretty good favorable matchup, but a different way you're looking to attack this thing?
Yeah, big home favorites, and understandably so. Patrick Corbin's going for the Nationals. Now, I do want to put a little disclaimer out there. I love this Nationals team. They're exceeding expectations. They're going to shatter what their preseason win total in the low 60s was. They're a fun team. That said, Patrick Corbin stinks on ice. And the Guardians are at home, one of the best teams in baseball, 18-6 at home. This year on the run line, they have the third best record at 33-23 and the second best ROI on the run line this season. Ironically, the Nationals have the second best record on the run line. But when Patrick Corbin and his ERA well over six are on the bump for Washington, they're a pretty good fade. So considering you can get the Guardians right around even money at home, where they've won 18 of 24 on the run line, to me, this is just too good to pass up. Even if you're giving away those final three outs because they're the home team, it's still, I like this Guardians team against Patrick Corbin for 24 outs more than I like the Nationals getting 27 outs. That's how convicted I am on this one. So when Corbin pitches, just find a different way to fade him. And for me, it's Cleveland run line tonight.
Patrick Corbin Day. It has not been quite as profitable this year as it has been in years past. But yes, the numbers speak for themselves there with the very outstanding, the young Tanner Bibee on the bump today there for the Cleveland Guardians. Talk about young pitchers. Ronel Blanco qualifies as a very young, exciting pitcher after his just immaculate, really, start to the season for Houston, how he has rocketed up sort of our viewpoints as daily baseball bettors, going from an unknown to now a commodity here, as he is pitching at home tonight for the Houston Astros. Just updating my odd screen, getting Pablo Lopez in Minnesota. That has been a flip of favorites here. A lot of respected money is coming in on the Stros, out to $1.20 favorites today with a total of eight.
Yeah, so unlike Patrick Corbin, where when he goes, you're looking for any which way to fade him, when Ronel Blanco is on the bump for Houston, really ever since his no-hitter, it just took that small sample size for me to say, I'm going to look for any which best angle to play him. And today, there is a heck of a value pick on the board. I'm taking him to get the win, plus 205 on DraftKings. He's made 9 starts this year. Now, one of them really doesn't count because he got ejected after the third inning. So in 8 full starts, he's 5-0. It's a pretty good rate of earning the decision. He'd probably be 6-0 if he didn't get tossed, because he was going up against Oakland and he was cruising through those first 3 innings against the A's. I like him a lot right here against Minnesota. Now, I was also looking at a K prop. I was also looking at him over 17.5 outs, which he's done 2/3 of his starts this year. But I settled on taking him to get the win because I think Houston's bats are going to erupt against Pablo Lopez. This guy has struggled this year, nowhere near the dominance we saw a year ago. And on the road this season in 5 starts, an ERA of 6 flat. Give me Houston. Give me Blanco to get the win, plus 205.
Bang. Let's go over 2-1 there for Blanco and the Houston Astros. Starting to play better baseball. What a terrible start for the Stros, but they have started to turn it on. Seems like everybody in the AL West is just begging for somebody to step up, and maybe the Astros are starting to find some life. Speaking of that division, one more we'll throw at you here, Joe, with the Angels and Mariners, a very specific angle you're looking to target. And two teams, Angels, man, how disappointing have they been? I feel like we've said that before. And then the Mariners, who continue to scuffle at the plate, but pitching has really been able to carry them as of late.
Yeah, the first place Mariners, who have great pitching. And you set me up for this one beautifully, because they don't have great offense. That's why I love the Nerfy in this one, even at the inflated price of having to lay $1.55 on DraftKings right now. Jose Soriano for the Angels had a horrendous April. It inflated his ERA in a huge way early this season. But in the first inning, the dude's been lights out. He's pitched to the Nerfy in 7 of 9 starts. Shout out to our guy, Jared Smith, who makes those incredible daily Nerfy-Yerfy spreadsheets. That's where I pulled that one from. But in the first inning, if you watch Soriano, he's coming out pumping 100. His breaking stuff is harder. It's sharper. He's just excellent in the first inning. And the only way I really see this not hitting is if maybe Julio connects on a 99 mile per hour fastball. Yeah. And, you know, let's the velocity of that pitch do most of the work and puts it into the seats, because the Mariners really don't make a lot of contact. They've got the worst K rate in baseball. So Soriano's inflated stuff in the first inning with the Mariners, you know, swinging and missing nonstop this season, I don't think they score. And then you look at Brian Wu, who's pitching for the Mariners. It's no secret, it's no surprise. This Angels lineup, 1-9, pretty bad throughout. Wu has been perfect, 4-0 to the Nerfy this year. I'm willing to lay the $1.55 because I love this Nerfy more than any other one on the board tonight.
Keep waiting for that Mariners offense to get it into gear. And it's, I mean, it was so bad early, only one direction to go up, but it still has not yet even approached the level that you would expect Seattle would be with the sort of hitters in that lineup there. So for our guy, Joe Cirala today here, Guardians run line, Tanner Bibee over Patrick Corbin, minus 102 there. Ronel Blanco to be the winning pitcher for the Houston Astros, over $2, plus 205, and then $1.55 on the Angels Mariners no run in the first inning. I love it. A nice little trio here for our Friday. It is college baseball season, though, Joe, and I'm very excited for regionals. They just started underway today with a few games starting in the morning. They'll be going all night tonight. Here at Circa, they put up lines on every single game. They were the first to do that a couple years ago, and now a lot of books have followed suit. So it's one of those, I think, for bettors, when we hear newer betting vehicle, like, we just automatically gravitate to it because lines are naturally going to be a little bit softer. There are some really good edges you can find if you pay attention to this stuff. I kind of just honestly lucked into this a couple years ago where I was doing a lot of play-by-play for college baseball, and they started posting numbers, and I'm like, well, I guess I'm calling a lot of games, so naturally I know a lot of teams, and that's kind of why I've chose to dive in as deep as I have. I know not something you've done yet, but I mean, I'm here to try to convince you, Joe, to get on the college baseball bandwagon.
Sell me, in the words of Jordan Belfort, sell me this pen.
Yes, well, and we've got a couple plays for today. I'd say, too, now that we're into regional, so you get 64 teams, just like the NCAA tournament. The difference is it's 64 teams broken up into 16 different four-team regionals here, with the number one seed as your host. Those 16 teams will all go on to super regionals. They'll play eight different super regionals, best of three game series. And that's how we get our College World Series field of eight. What is outstanding in the edge for me is, because of the unique nature, it's like a four team double elimination tournament. So you have to be really smart with your pitching. And I will look to identify teams that have really, really deep, strong starting pitching over the teams that are just your mashers, your groups that are just going to hit a homer after homer, and it have kind of padded their stats as a result of that. College baseball with the aluminum bats, a lot of volatility in that regard. So I'm here to sell you on looking at a team that is going under the radar, that has been there, done that. They're a mid-major from Terre Haute, Indiana State. The Sycamores, who went to Super Regionals last year, ended up falling in that round to TCU. TCU this year is the number two seed in the Lexington Regional, and is very, very live as any mid-major to take down a legit Power 5 program in Kentucky, who's the number one seed. So I bet Indiana State today, they're taking on Illinois, a group that is back for another deep run, have the Missouri Valley Coach of the Year in Mitch Hannes, who's done an outstanding job in Terre Haute, Missouri Valley Pitcher of the Year in Brennan Cutts, who's a legit Power 5 starter, pitching in a lower conference, and has eaten up that league, 6-1, sub-4 ERA. Sub-4 ERAs, by the way, Joe, very hard to find in college baseball.
In college baseball, As someone who pitched in college baseball, I understand.
You can certainly attest to that. So I will look for Indiana State. I played them on the money line today, parlay with Oklahoma, who is the number one seed in their region, taking on Oral Roberts. Oklahoma starting Kyson Witherspoon, a really talented righty who I got to see in person, who has put up a very, very good sub-4 ERA as well numbers this year, pitching in a very difficult conference to put up pitching numbers, the Big 12. You pair those two teams together, those each go underway at 7 Eastern, you get plus 114 shopping around Indiana State and then Oklahoma. And I went ahead, I put a sprinkle on Indiana State to win that regional. You can find as high as 3-1. Sycamores are going to be live. Two pitchers on their weekend arsenal with ridiculous numbers, admittedly in a weaker conference, but I love the Sycamores, Joe. I'm all in on them. I hope I've been able to sell you on Indiana State.
You know, plus 114, I might put a half a unit on that parlay and tell
there
you, Ben.
Go.
Hey, we got less than 30 seconds left. Do you have anything for the French Open? If I'm, you know, my insomnia is kicking in and I'm up at 2 a.m. tonight, Ben, what do I do?
I think now is the time to invest in Alexander Zverev, honestly. As much as he's not the most likable guy on tour, you still find him 4-1-ish. His draw's wide open. Meeting Djokovic in the semifinals. Djokovic not the same this year on the clay. That's all I will say on the French Open for now. Joe, it's been a blast, man. Great hanging out with you.
Absolutely.
We wrap things up. The Lombardi Line on VSiN. More great shows coming up next on the DraftKings Network. Sharp Money next here on VSiN.